B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Will it be 24? Will it be 20? My guess would be it'll fall somewhere in there. It won't just be 16. And then, you know, your typical straight 4 out of 7 series. Because I think the players, you know, want to get some games in before they go right into the playoffs. So how many that ends up being, like I said, I don't know the answer to that. But I think it'll be more than 16, be my guess.
Okay, so Bruce, is that fair? Because obviously the Bruins, you were amazing during the regular season, and it kind of cheapens the regular season if they allow all these teams to compete for playoff berths. Where do you stand on that?
Well, from our position, I'd rather it just 16. And I would rather it just be, again, this is just me and you talking. I don't have a say in all this. But I'd rather it be, you know, 16 teams, 4 rounds of 4 out of 7. Let's go. But hopefully we get to that 16, you know, in the right way, and it doesn't hurt us. I guess that's where I'm coming from, that we don't get kind of screwed in this process, because we shouldn't be. We should be rewarded for our regular season. But I don't think any scenario is going to be perfectly fair. I understand that.
But that's unacceptable.
Okay, again, that was Bruce Cassidy this morning with TNR. Catch the full interview on the podcast, 98.5thesportshub.com, the app. It's a good conversation. It's a good interview. And Fred is among those who are outraged by the fact that they may expand the playoffs to 20 or 24 teams. It's not May. They're going to. You know, again, all this stuff was sort of, you know, coming out of the weekend. I thought it was pretty clear that the NHL had sort of narrowed down what they were looking at. You know, the momentum, the critical mass is happening. They're coming back. And it's really now, I think, down to whether it's going to be 24 teams allowed or 20 teams allowed. But they're going to expand the playoffs. And Fred and others think it's unfair. It's unfair to teams like the Bruins, who had established their playoff position through 70 games of the NHL regular season. Agree or disagree, Maz, before I go on?
Disagree. What the hell does that have to do with the Bruins? The teams that get screwed are the teams down in the 16 area who you'd say, well, wait a minute, as of today, we're the 16th team. We should be in. Why are you letting 17 and 18 or 19 and 20 in, and then we have to have a play-in against those teams? Those are the teams that have a case. What case do the Bruins have? They're going to play someone from the bottom of the barrel no matter what. They're in, and they're going to be the top seed in all probability. Like, what's the bitching about? What is unfair from the Bruins' perspective?
I don't think it is at all. There's only one little fly in the ointment, but it's really just a psychological thing. And I've been talking about it for weeks, and that is the prospect of having to play Montreal.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, my own psychological damage of being a Bruins fan my whole life and having Montreal come out of nowhere and kick our ass every other year, you know, in my childhood. And that's all that is. But Montreal's not a good team.
Right.
But so.
And under normal circumstances, would we rather them play someone like Columbus or Carolina in the first round? Sure. But with this plan, like, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it.
It doesn't screw the Bruins. It doesn't.
It's not unfair to the Bruins in the least bit. The Bruins are cemented. They're at the top.
So
they're not really. All they're affected by is ultimately who they're going to face. But in theory, they could end up facing a worse team.
Maybe people just don't know the full details of what's been presented. Because what's presented, I think, is the fairest thing I've heard of any sport of any of the format that they had reported coming out of the weekend. We talked about it on Monday. I looked at this and said, I finally like it. You know, I finally like it. And what it's going to be, it's either going to be 20 or 24 teams. They're either going to play it off within the division, you know, so 4 times 6, or within the conference, 2 times 12, you know, whatever the case may be, in 2 or 4 cities. And the teams that were leading their division or the top seeds are going to get byes. So it's not like, again, Montreal's the 24th team. Montreal's 24th or Chicago's 24th. One of those two teams, Chicago and Montreal, are the two teams everyone's howling about because they've been out of it the entire time and they're not close to the playoffs and they were sellers at the deadline. And why are you going to start the playoffs with the Bruins and the Blackhawks and Canadiens on equal footing? They're not. They're not. The Blackhawks and Canadiens have to play a play-in series to even get into the 16. So you're guaranteed the spot in the 16. The teams that were outside the bubble, that were out of the 16, have to play their way into it, okay? And furthermore, there's going to be a little five-game, six-game regular season that's going to help do the seeding as well. So it's not like you're going to be sitting idle while these other teams are playing play-in rounds, which would have been unfair to you. You're all going to have a little mini regular season, five, six games, that's going to help determine seedings, by the way, which will incorporate your regular season record. They're going to combine the two, your regular season record with your record in this little mini regular season, so you'll be taken care of there. And then you get to sit for 3-4 days while others have this play-in tournament to get to 16.
Yeah, that's being forgotten here. Like, they get the benefit of a tune-up and also the benefit of the 100 points that they had when everything was shut down.
So, like, I think that the NHL did a good job with that. Like, the whole thing of combining the point percentage they have through 70 games in the regular season combined with the little 5 or 6 game mini season they're going to have here, I thought that was a brilliant stroke, because your advantage that you gained in the regular season is baked in. And so even if the Bruins were 10 points clear, 10 points, or sorry, 8 points clear for the President's Trophy, 8 points clear anyway of Tampa in the East. So they would have to go like 0 for 5 or 0 for 6 in that little mini regular season to lose their seeding. They're not going to lose their seeding. So the only thing, and it's something that bothers me just because I hate Montreal and I fear Montreal and I'm a puss, is the thought that when they have this plan, and the plan, whether it's conference-wide, you know, they put 12 teams in every city, or division-wide, they put 6 teams in every city. If Montreal upsets the team that they play in that little mini play-in, you get Montreal. And I hate the thought of having to look at those jerseys, that coach behind the bench, and oh, by the way, Carey Price, who if you get on the right week is the best goalie on the planet. I would just hate that, but you're not getting screwed because Montreal sucks. I'm just messed up in the head about Montreal.
Okay, so I was just going to ask you that. Is that unfair, or is that just going on between your ears?
It's between my ears.
Yeah, I'm with Mike on this.
Okay, so look.
It's not unfair. There's nothing unfair about it. It's not remotely unfair.
I think they lose to Montreal, not because they're worse than Montreal, but because they choke against Montreal and because I'm effed in the head with Montreal. But when you think about it.
I agree.
It's a better matchup than they would have gotten. You know, as it stands right now, the Bruins would have had
Columbus.
Probably Columbus. That would have been their first round matchup. Columbus has 33 wins on the year. Montreal has 31. Columbus has 81 points on the year. Montreal has 71. Columbus is a better team. Okay, so it's entirely possible that instead of getting Columbus in the first round, which you would have if we hadn't had the apocalypse, you get a much worse team. So you actually benefit from this. But the fact that it's Montreal.
Like, yeah, see, I look at Columbus and I was
messes
like,
messes me up.
That would have been favorable. I would have liked that, or the Hurricanes or Florida. But I'm with you on this. I'm traumatized by Montreal and how historically they've come in here and beaten better Bruins teams.
But I think people have somehow gotten a little bent out of shape about this, including Fred. Give me number 2 there, Jimmy.
That's unacceptable. Yeah, I mean, if you go through the regular season and you have the most points, that's unacceptable. Right, I mean, they can't do that. Yeah. They can't do that to you. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, what did you play for then?
Yeah,
you understand what I'm saying?
I think our guys will, like Cam and Donnie, and you know, ownership will argue for the best deal possible for us. I don't think they're going to want to see us get hurt in this process. I just think sometimes when you have these circumstances where we're just trying to get some hockey back in, get playing, in probably empty buildings by every account, and I think that was originally discussed. Now it looks like it's going to be automatic, so it's just for TV, which would be great to get back playing and get something on TV. But at the end of the day, you probably have to sacrifice for the good of the game. I guess that's will be the question put to the teams that are the field that, because, I guess you could put Tampa. They've had a good year. Vegas on the other side in that category. If they kind of lose some of the edge of that regular season from what they've earned. So, but that's the way I look at it right now. I'm just hopeful we get a chance to play, to be honest with you. Cause I think, I love our chances no matter how it shakes out. But you're right, to a certain extent. It may hurt us the way they reconfigure this thing.
I don't see how I don't see how it hurts them, Mass.
I don't get it. What are people talking about? Like, look, I love Fred, but when he says, well, what you earned during the regular season, you still get that. They'll still be the top seed. Unless Tampa overtakes them in this little round robin, in which case they'll be the number two seed.
Right.
In which case they'll still be at home most of the time.
Well, they're still going to buy.
It doesn't really affect them. The Bruins are going to be fine here. Now, it feels to me like Cassidy is talking about the disruption. Now, if he talks about the disruption caused by the pandemic, we were on a roll. We were 44-14. We were 22-4 at home. Blah blah blah. All true. How are we going to fix that one? Not fixable. Not fixable for anybody. You know, Tampa would tell you they were playing well. There were a lot of teams that would tell you that were playing well that they got disrupted. That, you know, how do we stop that one? We can't. But that has nothing to do with the format that they're going to structure for when the teams come back.
Let me tell you the teams that get screwed. The teams that get screwed are Toronto or Pittsburgh. And Toronto, 81 points, 10 points clear of Montreal. Toronto, been in the playoff structure pretty much the entire year, okay? Firmly in the playoff mix the entire year. Legit playoff team, have been all year. Same with Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, 86 points on the year compared to Montreal's 71 points. Pittsburgh, clearly in the playoff structure the entire year. No doubt about it. Top 16 team. Those are the teams that are going to have to play this little mini playoff with Montreal. Those are the teams that get screwed. Those are the teams that look at this and say, wait a minute, over 69, 70 games, we clearly proved we were in the top 16 by double-digit points. Now we have a chance to play a little mini three-game series against Carey Price, or if you're in the West, Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane, and all of a sudden we have a couple bad nights, we lose a 2 out of 3 and we're out. Those teams, Edmonton, which would have to face the Chicago team, those are the teams that get screwed.
Absolutely. Pork sausages for everybody, for crying out loud.
Here we're not getting...
They get completely screwed.
Here we're not getting screwed unless you're like me and Murray and maybe some others. You just think a series against Montreal means a loss, which I do always, 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 always.
Unless you're a mental case.
And I'm telling you, you can already book it. You can already write it down.
I am.
If Montreal gets into that, if they can get past that little... Now, see, I like going conference-wide versus division-wide because if it's a conference structure, if it's two hub cities with 12 teams per conference, Pittsburgh gets Montreal. Okay? I think Pittsburgh wins that series. If Montreal gets Toronto, if it's by division, if it's four hub cities and it's by division, then Toronto gets Montreal. Toronto will lose to Montreal because Toronto's a bunch of choking pigs. And then you get Montreal with a little momentum and Carey Price having played well, and then you lose that, and then you can say we got porked, but you really didn't. You just gagged.
You can't.
You just gagged.
No, you can't say that either, because again, if the Bruins can't beat Montreal, they don't deserve to win the cup.
They're not going to beat Montreal. But so this is why I want Pittsburgh to get Montreal. Pittsburgh won't gag. Pittsburgh will take care of Montreal. And then I think you go back to getting Columbus or a team like that, which is fine, and that's how it would have been. And all fair is love and war. I don't have the stomach to have those Montreal series are not fun. I don't know what you people think those are fun. Like, there's nothing fun about that.
You're as bad as these jack wagons who can't hold it like a pizza.
Your phones right after this on everything.
They say it.
Oh, I didn't say that. Yes, you did.
Yes, they did.
Oh, you said it. You said it. I can prove that you said it. You said it.
It's Felger and Mass. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
There are your insiders, Bob, Dregs, and Pierre. And gentlemen, it seems this 24-team tournament whittled down to a 16-team playoff is the favored format right now. But, Dregs, how concerned is the NHL about fairness, that one of these teams at the bottom that just gets in may be able to pull off an upset in a short series?
Well, it's an important issue. There's no doubt about that. The NHL knows this. So does the NHL Players Association. Perhaps more contentious if you're an NHL general manager and you're a general manager on a better club. You wouldn't want equal footing across the 24-team format. So part of what has been a daunting task with the Return to Play Committee, the PA, and the NHL is trying to determine appropriate value from where a club was sitting in regular season play and then transferring that into the field of 24. You know, if you look at what some of the matchups might look like, Montreal, a non-playoff team by regular season standards, faces the Pittsburgh Penguins, a pretty good team in the Eastern Conference. Should they be at an equal position starting the play-in of the 24-team format, or Edmonton or Chicago for that matter? So, James, I'll tell you, there's been a ton of discussion on this. As I said, an important issue. And before they sign off on a return-to-play scenario, this is going to have to be resolved.
Those are the teams that get screwed. Darren Dreger, Pittsburgh, Edmonton. The teams that are sort of in the middle of the playoff structure, but were comfortably, firmly there. They're the ones that have a chance to be knocked out before they get to 16, before they get to the real playoff structure. So those are the teams that should be howling, and I get it. But you know what? You're all going to have to – someone's going to have to take something that they don't like. And they're all going to have to take something they don't like. This is the whole point. It's like what do you want?
That's life now, I mean, unfortunately.
Deal with it. Deal with it. And, you know, so Pittsburgh and Edmonton, you could have won a few more games, and you could have been second or first in your division versus third. That's just, you know, sorry. I'm sure there's games that you blew during the regular season that if you had just taken care of business, you wouldn't be in that position. So I'm sorry. That's just the way it's going to be. And, oh, by the way, just beat the bad number 12 seed. Just beat a bad Montreal team. Beat a bad, even though the Bruins wouldn't be able to do it. You take care of business, Pittsburgh. You beat that bad Montreal team. Edmonton, you beat that bad Chicago team. And, oh, by the way. And the more I think of it, the more I don't blame the league either. People have said, oh, well, they're just doing it because it's Montreal and it's Chicago and it's the Rangers. That's another team that would slip in here in this expanded playoff format. New York, Chicago, Montreal, three very important markets for the NHL. To which I say, you know what? That's all the more reason to do it. It is. Sorry. They got to recoup their money. They got to recoup their revenue. And if you're telling me, I think Arizona's another team, so that's a bad example. But if you're telling me that, you know, we're going to bend over backwards to get Ottawa in there, I wouldn't do it. Bend over backwards to get Montreal, as much as I loathe them. Bend over backwards to get Chicago in there, who I do like. It's worth it to the league. This is, I mean, the only reason they're coming back is for the money anyway. So make the most money. Let those big market teams in. I've sort of come to Jesus even on that part of it. And it's not strictly fair, but, oh, by the way, it's
the best we're going to get,
I think. The apocalypse. Yeah. It's not fair. The whole thing isn't fair. So back to your phones on this end, Brady. Here's Laura in Linfield. Says the Bruins got screwed. Laura, how did they get screwed?
Okay, first of all, I'm amazed at how long you've talked, Felger. So
it
coming
is amazing,
from the hockey family, no, I'll just say that I know the work and conditioning that goes into these players, so they got screwed in the fact that, yeah, I get they were in first place, but these guys can't just come back and just start playing. No one in the league can. Like, they're trying to do their own conditioning and their own practices, but it's not even going to happen for a season or a playoff season to be able to make this real where the players can be
okay,
paid.
So, Laura, what you're saying is, Laura, thanks for the call. What she's saying is the pandemic screwed them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it screwed everybody.
Right.
So, yes, like that part's true. Absolutely. If all things were equal and we didn't have the apocalypse and it just went on as, you know, life went on as normal, the Bruins would have been in a better position because they were rolling. They were rolling. But, okay, now it's the pandemic. What are you going to do? But in terms of the actual...
Well, and it's all...
Go.
Yeah, and it's also the NHL. The nature of the NHL playoffs is that even if you are the top seed, how many times have we seen the Bruins have a great regular season and get bounced in the second round? It happens all the time. So we weren't... You know, no one was giving them the cup. It's just not the nature of the sport. Relative to everybody else in the league, they did not get screwed.
Let me tell you that, you know, if you want to talk about NBA teams, I think the top seeds in the NBA... will be getting screwed even worse in that teams like Milwaukee or Toronto or the Lakers for sure could have counted on home court teams traveling, you know, the usual structure of the NBA playoffs. It really helps to be home in game 7. I don't need to tell you that. And now that's going to be totally wiped out. Again, nothing you can do about it. It's the pandemic. It's the apocalypse. What are you going to do? You got to play in empty buildings and neutral sites and all of this. But talk about losing a massive advantage. Those top NBA seeds are the ones. But again, I wouldn't complain to the league about it. I wouldn't complain about the format. You're still going to be a top seed in the NBA and in the NHL. Mary in Manchester, back on Brady. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi, Mike. So my question to you guys is, if Belichick had played Butler in that Super Bowl with Philly and we'd actually won that game, and then we would have had two Super Bowl wins after the Garoppolo trade, wouldn't they have been hard-pressed not to sign Brady to an extension, and would he still be here today?
Huh. Interesting. Even though Brady threw for 500 yards or whatever in that game, the fact that they lost it gave Bill more leeway not to sign Brady to that contract. Do you buy any of that?
I mean, the ball's on him if he feels that way when he's the one that actually cost them that game.
I mean, that would be.
Yeah. Who is more responsible for the Patriots losing that game? The guy who benched one of your best cornerbacks with no explanation, or the guy who threw for over 500 yards and actually had you competing in that game? I'll put it on the guy that was actually running the operation.
Yeah, it's the coach. And honestly, I don't know that. I mean, I hear Mary's point, and it's a good one. Because, you know, sometimes in that good feeling that spills over, you start thinking a little differently. And, you know, maybe they would have thought differently, but the Patriots are pretty disciplined. I don't think Brady was getting his money either way.
Ben in Franklin. Go ahead, Ben, on Brady.
Hey, I just wanted to point out that, what's his name?
Jordan.
Jordan had Rage to Master. Brady definitely did not. That's all I wanted to point out.
Jordan did what? What did he say?
What did you say?
Rage to Master.
What does that mean?
He was like laser focused for the beginning of his career and wouldn't stop.
Okay, so his comment line says Brady didn't have the competitiveness that Jordan did. So Jordan had the rage to master. I hope that's not
right.
It sounds
sort
like
of filthy,
or white supremacist something like that. That sounds like I have no idea what that is. So I'm not responsible for that.
Triggering
phrase.
A cell of
exactly.
some kind.
Exactly. What the hell?
Brady was competitive. Brady's one of the more. He's as psycho as Jordan was.
Wrong. Brady is every bit as competitive as Michael Jordan. It doesn't have the gambling habit. So I reject that. I think that's another comparison that holds to me. I think Brady and Jordan, in not exactly the same way, but generically speaking, are the two of the greatest competitors in the history of sport. And I think Brady absolutely belongs in that same conversation. You know, I even asked the other thing. Does Jordan belong in the same conversation as Brady? Because I think Jordan just might have – but what do you call it, Murray? An action junkie? Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like Jordan's quote-unquote competitiveness just might have been his gambling problem, you know, his compulsive gambling issue coming out on the floor.
All he needed to hear was dice in someone's hand. Oh, whoa.
Or anything, yeah. But they were both incredible, the two of the most competitive guys in the history of sport.
I mean, I don't think Brady has to hold a candle to anybody in that area. And look, again, it's never apples to apples because of the nature of the sport. Jordan had the ball in his hands all the time and for a bigger percentage of the time maybe than Brady did. But regardless, Brady didn't need a two-year break in the middle of his career, and he played longer. So, you know, there was the burnout factor with Brady, if it came, and it did, here in Foxborough anyway, came much later than it did with Jordan. Let's not be stupid.
Real quick, this thing about Jordan embracing Chicago and being Chicago and embodying Chicago, which I feel happened and has not happened with Brady in Boston. We hit on that earlier. Rick in Plymouth, you have a thought on that.
How you doing? There's a point you made on Brady last hour, and I wanted to expand on it just a little bit. You said that Brady never really warmed up to Boston.
Right.
He never really belonged here.
Right.
He was never the David Ortiz of this town. I mean, Ortiz embraced this town.
Right.
He owned it. He loved it.
Agreed.
Tom Brady, if you listen to every one of his interviews, he always referred to it as my team or our team. He never uttered the word New England or Patriot once unless he won a Super Bowl. Honestly, it's the only time he ever said Boston a day in his life.
I just don't feel he – again, I think Ortiz became Boston, and I think Paul Pierce became Boston. And I still think they carry that through to this day. I think Pierce has this Boston pride corny line, but I think he does. And I think
– they still show up for big games, and they're almost like dignitaries of their teams. And maybe Brady becomes that someday for the Patriots, but I don't know. Like someone tweeted to me a really good example. Last year during the Stanley Cup Final – I mean, where's Brady out there
for a couple
of minutes to wave the flag?
Couldn't be bothered to go out there and grab the flag for a second.
You know? And he never does anything like that.
And it's all just, I mean, I don't know.
Love that crap around here.
I just don't think he ever became Boston, embodied Boston, or embraced it the way Jordan did Chicago. I mean, that was a jumping off point. And I think there are athletes, championship caliber athletes, that came to embody Boston and represent Boston on both, you know, going both ways and wanted to be represented by Boston and embraced all of it. I don't know if Brady ever really did. We continue. Right after Murray's update, we'll give an MLB update as well after Murray's headlines.
Felger and Mass.
Wow.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Real quick update on MLB. I don't know how much of an update it is, but fascinating story Maz clued us into this morning. Joel Sherman, New York Post. Getting into, I'm going to attempt to read some of this, so hopefully you can follow all of it. It's written by lawyers, so it gets wordy, but it's
good luck.
It is.
It's a little clunky, but
This is
do your best.
Unbelievable. So what this is, okay, according to Joel Sherman, New York Post, the headline is internal MLB email. You know, they say proves that the union knows they have to renegotiate salaries if no fans were in the stands. This is a sticking point. Okay, the original agreement where the players agreed to a prorated share of their salaries based on games played, according to the owners, included a provision that said we have to renegotiate further if there are no fans. The players are claiming, nope, there's no such provision. We gave you the give back. The only give back is we get paid on a prorated basis the number of games you play. There's no provision here for no fans. Where the owners are saying, nope, there's a provision here that says if there's no fans, we need further concessions. And they can't even agree on this. What's in writing in the first effing agreement from last month? So as proof, Major League Baseball, the owners are providing Joel Sherman with an internal email that they say proves the union knows they have to give further givebacks. And this email is between lawyers with the MLB, okay? So it's an internal league memo between two lawyers, all right? I'm not going to give you their names, but the email starts off by saying Matt asked. Matt is a PA lawyer, okay? Matt is the MLB PA lawyer, and this is an email detailing a conversation between the MLB PA lawyer and the MLB lawyer. And in this, apparently the PA lawyer is asking to clarify language in that first agreement related to this. Does this make sense so far? So here it is. The email between lawyers at MLB. Matt, meaning the PA lawyer, asked what economic feasibility meant in Section 1. I told him it meant that we would only consider playing in neutral sites or without fans if it worked for us economically. I said, for example, that we might be willing to have a conversation about playing some limited number of games in empty stadiums if players agreed to reduce their daily salaries for those games, and if it was part of a larger plan that made economic sense. Matt, the PA lawyer, confirmed that this is what he thought we meant, but he still appreciated the confirmation. So, again, this is two major league lawyers, Major League Baseball lawyers, saying we talked to the PA lawyer and he asked for clarification on this. And when we told him it meant further givebacks in empty stadiums, he said, yeah, that's what I assumed, but I just wanted to confirm it. And MLB is saying, see, they knew. Joel Sherman, being the good reporter that he is, he then takes this internal MLB email to the MLB PA and asks someone at the Players Union, okay, Bruce Meyer. Bruce Meyer at the Players Association responded to that internal email with this. The contract itself is very clear that in the event of a partial season, players will get paid pro rata salary, whether the fans are in the stands or without. And it doesn't require any further concessions on pay from players who have already agreed to give up billions of dollars in salary in the event of a partial season in which they would be taking an unprecedented risk and burden. He says, if they, meaning MLB, has a proposal on economics, they should make it, as we've repeatedly invited them to do. Despite all of their posturing, they still haven't done so. Rather than actually negotiating over these issues, the league is focusing on leaking self-serving internal memos to the media. So then Sherman, being the good reporter that he is, takes that statement from the PA and shows it to someone back at Major League Baseball.
Attaboy, Joel.
And so he gets Major League Baseball then to respond to the PA's response to the MLB's original internal memo. Are you following?
Yes. I just didn't like that this thing was titled as Here's the Smoking Gun. It takes you forever to get to the... It's well, like, oh, God, Jesus, come on.
So here's what MLB counters with. And Sherman writes that MLB countered with one of its own statements that emphasized a tense situation growing even more so. Oh, you think? The MLB statement said this: we're glad that Mr. Meyer, the PA weasel, we're glad that Mr. Meyer finally has admitted that the March agreement contemplates a subsequent negotiation between the parties if the 2020 season is to be played without fans. While Mr. Meyer now says that the union has repeatedly invited the league to make a proposal, that cannot be squared with the public comments by the union and at least one agent that players are unwilling to agree to a reduction of player compensation in order to play the 2020 season without fans. That's referring to
Boris.
The union even publicly rejected a potential league proposal to share all revenues equally with players before such a player was even made to it. That refers to Tony Clark.
Correct.
And so back and forth, weasel lawyers yapping at each other's heels. Like, this is why I think, just to relate to the hockey real quick, that, you know, I think the hockey's closer than any league, because they're quibbling over, is it 20 or 24 teams? Is it, you know, by division or by conference? Like, that's sort of the nitty-gritty to me.
They're actually talking about playing.
They're actually talking about playing and what it's going to look like.
Correct.
MLB, you know, we've been running this promo, but it's like MLB is still in this place where it's, well, you said it. I didn't say it. You said, I didn't say that. You said it. Tony Clark said, Scott Boras said, we didn't say that. We're waiting for a proposal. Well, you said it's in the contract. It's not in the contract. It says it right there in the contract. Your guy said to our lawyer that he thought it was in the contract. Thank you for confirming it. We have the email. That email doesn't say anything. We didn't say it. Yeah, you said it. You didn't say it. I said it. You didn't say it. Like, that's where MLB is still at, right? That's what that whole thing is, if you could follow.
Yes, it's exactly what it is. And in fact, when you say they're still in that spot, I think it's getting worse.
Oh, my God. Oh,
yeah, I think it's getting worse. Yeah. That's it's deteriorating even further. And this is what the relationship between baseball and the union has been like at its worst over the last 40 years. Well, that's not what that says. No, that's what this says. It says exactly that. It says that. No, it doesn't. This is what they do. They argue over the language.
You say you want a proposal, but Boras already said he's not going to negotiate. Tony Clark said he's not doing revenue sharing. That's a salary cap. That's what you said. We didn't say that. Yes, you did. You said it. I can prove it. You said it. That's not what that means. Yeah, that's what that means. You asked us. You sent us an email. See, we said so. Like, that's still where they're at. It's unbelievable. Baseball's the only sport I'm hearing that in, Mass. Only sport.
I'm telling you, it's standard operating procedure when it comes to stuff like this in that sport, or at least it feels like it has been. And look, I happen to, you know, I can't wait to see Gasper on Friday, because I think the union is, oh, I think they're being weaselly on this one.
They understood.
They knew what was at stake.
Thank you.
They knew that if there were no fans in the stands, that they were probably going to have to talk again, but they want to dig in their heels because they don't want to give up a penny more.
Agreed. Thank you for saying so.
They knew exactly what the landscape was, and now they're trying to play dumb, either because their lawyers screwed up or deep down they really don't want to play. And maybe they don't want to play for health reasons, in which case I say, fine, don't play. I get it. I mean, I'm not telling you that I would play, because I don't know that I would, because I'd be scared too. But if that's what it is, then just say we don't want to play and end it.
Okay, both sides sound like wordy, litigious douchebags. Both sides. However, who do I believe? Who's more in the right than the wrong? I'm still on the owner's side.
Me too.
Absolutely. You think that when you first agreed to that thing in March, that the owners didn't have in the back of their mind that if we lose the gate, meaning half of our revenue, that's not going to impact what the new agreement looks like? I mean, you really felt that way? That's such a lie. And I'm sorry, that internal MLB memo, I think, does sort of shed light on that. I think the PA knew it, had it in the back of their mind. If the language was ambiguous, they got it confirmed. And that's the deal. So do you want to play or not?
Still, nothing sums up how they feel better than, I got to get mine.
What
Blake Snell said last week.
That's it.
Okay. Or, I'm taking my time. I don't care.
So that's the MLB latest. So just about what you would expect. Coming up next, your calls, our long commercial-free segments, and fresh Fuppets. This is usually a Friday thing, but they've dropped early. Hardy put in a tremendous amount of work. We have to say we've already previewed it. It's one of the best we've ever seen.
It's great.
It's phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
Basically, if you want a hint or a tease, it's, you know, don't you wake up Murray with your sound of children or birds in the morning. He's not going to have any of that.
It's essentially the exclamation point as to how miserable Jim Murray has been the last 2 months.
So that's the subject of this week's Fuppets. We're going to play them on Wednesday because they dropped today and Hardy put in a lot of work and they're brilliant. So you'll hear the Fuppets. It's a long commercial-free segment. We'll get back to your calls as well, all after these words.
Felger and Mass.
Whee!
It's way more than just a sports talk radio show.
This truly is the apocalypse.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Here's how it works now, Scott. On Sunday morning at 9 o'clock, a former player who's now an instructor and has had 30 years in the game called me on the phone on a Sunday morning and started screaming about the proposal that the owners sent to the players. And he said, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. There is no chance we're going to play this season. That's what he told me. The next day, I spoke to a general manager who is very plugged in on this, and he told me the chances of playing this year are 100%.
Who do you believe?
Scott, this is the problem. I believe everyone, and I don't believe anyone. That's the problem. It doesn't matter who you speak to. He has a different thought on things than the next person that you're going to talk to. The only thing is we have to have complete collaboration between the union and the owners in order to get this done. And right now, they're simply not on the same page.
Not on the same page. They can't even agree. They have an agreement in writing from March about prorating salaries and what it would look like if they play games without fans in the stands. And they can't even agree that what the words say. The only sport that I'm hearing this in. The others are trying to figure out how to get it done. The baseball players and owners can't even speak the same language, for crying out loud.
And it should be the easiest sport to figure out because, again, it's non-contact. All the other sports are contact sports. This should be the easiest one to do.
And there's also precedent. You have at least two leagues in Asia that are playing right now. And so you can even follow their template. So someone tells me they're going to be last, not first, because they hate each other like poison and they're all a bunch of jerks.
I'm starting to think that there's a chance they don't play at all and they just bag it.
Real quick, Alan in Florida, you want to follow up?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, one of the big problems, for years, the players' union outdid the owners. Why? Because they had Miller, they had Fear, they had Orza. Now, you've got, whether you like Manfred or not, a Harvard Law School graduate, you got smart lawyers, and then you got Tony Clark on the other side. I mean, you know, it's a complete mismatch right there. So, this leaked yesterday. And the players are 1,000% wrong. I mean, they knew this. It's in writing. There's nothing they can do. And the only thing that's going to maybe resolve this is Manfred might have to tell the owners to bite the bullet because they're going to play. I don't care what anyone says. They're going to play. Why? Because of the same old word, money. They have to play.
Okay, well, I just hope the owners stand up to the union for once. I mean, I say for once recently and just hold their ground. And to me, like that, again, this all goes back to, I really, at the end of the day, don't care what the players make versus the owners. I'm actually for the players on that, you know, usually. But I'm so against the players on pace of play that it's a cause to have the baseball owners break up the players' union, because I think, in my mind, that'll get my game back. I can get games back to 245 and get pitchers to actually throw the baseball. It really all goes back to that for me. I mean, I'll be honest. The economics, though. I mean, come on, guys. Did you really think that they could play in empty stadiums and you're still going to make exactly what you're going to make in full stadiums? I mean, that's just absurd.
Like, I mean, so to me, that's a big one. As I look at that and I say, well, come on now. Like, you know, and I do think, and I tend to be, you know, a little soft on this sort of stuff, but you have a deal and then we're in the middle of a pandemic. You can't just go back and say, well, let's modify this because it's not right. I mean, it's just, it doesn't work what we agreed on because you're going to have money coming in the door. And I sort of look at it in that context. And then inevitably, it deteriorates into, well, the owners have more money than the players do, so why aren't they giving? Because that's not what it's about. The deal is between the owners and the players. The money that comes in the door, this is what we base our agreements on. It doesn't matter what I have outside of here or not. Just like it doesn't matter that Tom Brady's married to Gisele Bündchen. Okay, like the people that love to shove that down Brady's throat, like, is what, somehow it's his fault that his wife makes a lot of money and he's supposed to give back and not get what he's worth in the football arena? That's asinine. So I look at it that way and I say, if the owners aren't bringing in revenue and you're playing games, well, then the model's different. It's a different model. You've got to discuss that. To me, that is fair.
Okay, we'll take your thoughts on that. We have a conversation going about Brady and the Last Dance, and are we witnessing the Patriots' Last Dance with some of the same dynamics in real time? We'll get back to that as well. Take your thoughts on that. We're spending a lot of time on the NHL playoff format. We have a bone to pick with an NHL player who gave some thoughts on it. We'll do that coming up as well. But first, The Fuppets by Hardy, who did a brilliant job this week. Subject matter, again, don't wake Murray up with your nonsense happy sounds in the morning like birds and kids playing. He will have none of it. That will be the subject of this week's Fuppets. If you're watching on NBC Sports Boston, you'll see the visual in all of its glory. We'll tweet it out on our socials and blast it out there, and you can watch it there on your phone as well. It serves as an audio segment, too, as usual. Here are the Fuppets, and you hear the update. No commercials, and we're right back. Roll it.
Murray, am I hearing your cats again?
No, those are the children outside.
So I was going to say, there's either kids or cats squawking in the background.
Oh, yeah.
What's the difference? Are the kids afraid of you, Murray?
I've had to scream at those children.
How old are the kids, Murray?
They're between like 6 and 10.
Oh, Jesus, Murray! You're MFing the 6-year-olds?
Yeah. It's bad enough I have to hear the birds chirping to wake me up, try to wake me up at 6 when I'm trying to sleep till noon. It's enough to make me want to just, you know, off myself.
See, most people, like birds singing and children playing, are happy. Like, that's a good thing to wake up to. Not
yeah,
so much.
Yeah, I can do without the birds.
Murray.
Especially, have you ever had a woodpecker on your house?
Yeah.
Holy crap, that's like the worst thing ever.
So, Maz, how do you get rid of...
The woodpecker hammering on the side of the house when I'm trying to get a couple of Z's.
How do you get the woodpecker out?
You got to hang... Hold on. My wife's got the answer. Hold on. Shiny stuff from the windows. Something that would look like tinsel, but you hang it on the windows, and it does. It scares away the woodpeckers because something about the reflection freaks them out.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.